Friendship isn't the big things, it's the million little things. Hello there, friends, and welcome to this, another episode of A Million Little TV Shows Podcast. This is where we break down and discuss episodes of TV shows that you may not have even heard of. I believe these TV shows need a little more love, and that is what this platform is here to do. Each week, we will be covering different shows from all over the globe. We'll be breaking down each episode, giving you the main highlights, and going through it bit by bit. But for now, I think it's best that we find out what's on the menu today. Hello there, and welcome back to this, A Million Little TV Shows Podcast. This is now Season 4, Episode 8, and I genuinely can't believe I've got this far. In 3 episodes' time, it is going to be number 50. And at the end of this season, which, as always, is 13 episodes long, it's going to end up being a whole year. So, quite a lot of good stuff coming up. I'm not sure what to do with it yet, whether I will do anything with it, but I am going to start looking at how many episodes I've actually covered of TV, because it has been fuck ton so far. But as you know, we've just finished an episode of A Million Little Things, in fact, the season finale of that, and today we're going to be going on to the season 2 finale of Miracle Workers. So this is going to be Season 2, Episodes 6 to 10. Now, again, I love this season. I'm sure you could hear me chuckling in the last episode that we covered this. It's such a fun series. It makes me chuckle. It just makes me laugh all the time. I think it's daft. I think it's funny. And I think Dan Radcliffe and Geraldine Viswanathan are fucking brilliant in it. They are an absolute joy to watch. And it really is a contrast from A Million Little Things. You aren't going to get a cancer diagnosis in this, for instance. But it just takes away from all the strain of what I've been watching with A Million Little Things and gives me that sense of joy back. Because it can be a really deep series, A Million Little Things, especially when you start to apply it to your own life. Whereas this, I don't remember the Dark Ages, so yeah, I only end up comparing it to things like Blackadder, which always is a joy, because I do love that show as well. So, we're going to get back into it. There's not a lot to talk about when it comes to the podcast, other than hopefully the length of the episodes are going to start coming down now, and hopefully you're going to enjoy today, and my take on Miracle Workers Season 2. So, let's get into it. This is Miracle Workers Season 2 Finale, Episode 6 to 10. Episode 6, Music Festival. So we get to see a bit of the relationship between both Al and Maggie. And it seems that they used to just play pranks on the town. They used to do knock a door run or whatever iteration you call it, where you basically knock on a door and run away. Simple. And this is potentially where they ended up being in a war with the Valdrogians, because they did it to the castle and then Al shouted out that it was the Valdrogians and they'd come to wage war. And so the army was sent out to go and kill the Valdrogians. So possibly that is where it came from. However, we see a year later that now that Maggie has her job as a nun and Al is sort of still in the same place, she hasn't gone any further than what she would have done a year ago. Apart from now, she occasionally works with her dad. And so she's a little bit down on the town. She feels like it just sucks. And when she sees Prince Chauncey and she tells him just that this place sucks and she doesn't like being there anymore. By the way, Prince Chauncey changed his hair, which we saw it was a wig in a previous episode, and then he has now just gone back to Daniel Radcliffe, which really makes me laugh. However, she tells him that the town sucks, and so he goes to his father and tries to find a way to basically get the town back on side, make them happy. And in particular, he wants to make Al happy. And so after his dad laughs it off, basically saying that if they don't agree with him, he'll happily kill them, Chauncey just decides to do something for the people. And when he speaks to Vexley, Vexley says, "What are you going to do for them? Give them their human rights?" And he says, "No, I'm going to put on a music festival." It's such a fun line, so well delivered, so dry. But Al gets excited about this, and she goes to see Maggie to see if Maggie can get out of being at the convent for a day just so they can go to this music festival. But then another fucking killer line comes up when Al asks, "Can you come?" And Maggie says, "No, I have a board meeting." And Al looks confused, and she says, oh, it's a meeting where we hit each other in the head with the board as sort of a penance. It's fucking ridiculous. And also early in the episode when Al and Maggie meet for the first time in a long time, they're watching an execution, but Maggie has turned up late. And as she has, she is sat next to Al, and Al's trying to describe what happened with this first execution. And the way that the camera's shot, it looks like Maggie is scrolling on a phone. But obviously it's the Dark Ages, so it can't be a phone. And so when the camera pans to her, she's sat playing with her rosary. It's fucking brilliant. What a great piece of writing. But since there's going to be a big headline act, Maggie decides that she can get the time off and is going to go to the festival instead. So it's the day of the concert, and Al is super stoked about this. She goes over to see Chauncey, and she tells him that this is awesome, but she also requests that the headline act play a song that she really enjoys. And so Chauncey is trying to impress Al at this point, and tells her that he's definitely going to play that song. And when he goes backstage to speak to the guy, played by Fred Armiston, he's basically a aging rock star, but he has got into his artistic phase. Like, really poor music. Nothing like his original stuff that got him popular. We've seen it, we've heard it. When it comes to certain artists, they do something different and you go, ah, it's kind of shit. But because Chauncey wants to please Al, he's basically throwing money at this guy. First of all, to get him on stage. And second of all, he's giving him all the luxuries that he wants, including his own personal toilet guy, which turns out to be Eddie. And so as the concert's going on, Al is stood out in the crowd with Maggie, and it's getting a little stale already. And Al finds out that Maggie has actually invited one of her friends from work, Trish. And it's a little frustrating for Al, because she's always had Maggie there, and it's a bit like when you meet a friend who has a friend there from work, and you don't really get on with that person. They were the type of person that you would take the piss out of back in the day, and that they're not really that your type of person. And there just seems to be clashes with both Al and Maggie at this point. Eventually, the lead act comes on stage, straight away smashes up his guitar and starts doing some absolute shite while he's on stage, and both Al and Maggie are disappointed by this. Al keeps trying to watch the concert, but keeps getting distracted by both Maggie and Trish being friends with each other. And at one point, Maggie walks off with Trish and starts performing acts that are basically deemed work. And so Al confronts her about this, basically saying that her job's pathetic. And Maggie tells her that, well, at least I'm doing something, unlike you. And it seems to just cause this massive tension between the two of them. Al realises how much of a dick she's being and goes straight over to Maggie and tells her that she's sorry for doing what she did. Her job isn't bad, it's just that Al is jealous. She doesn't know where she wants to be in the world. Obviously, she thought she was going to be going to school, but that didn't pan out for her. And then she thought she was going to be a doctor, and that didn't pan out for her either. And she's just in a stuck place right now, whereas Maggie seems to have it all together. And so she asks, do you want to stay and just watch one more song? And Maggie agrees, and they take Trish with her. But when the artist storms off stage and goes back into his quote-unquote dressing room, Chauncey gets pissed off because he sees that Al is disappointed and is about to walk away. And so he starts to turn into his father a little bit and claims that he will crush the lead artist's skull if he doesn't get his ass back on stage, and proves it by actually having a skull with him that Vexley has to carry around because of his father, who always asks for a skull so that he can crush it. And so he manages to put his thumbs through the top, but it is enough to convince this guy to get back on stage, whereas his dad would have just turned it into dust. Chauncey isn't as bad. He goes back on stage and he plays the song that everyone wanted him to play, and the festival ends up being an absolute success. And even Chauncey gets involved and starts dancing around with Al, Maggie and Trish. Trish, however, ends up catching the eye of the lead singer and ends up going out on tour with him, we find out afterwards. Al finds out that Maggie has got a promotion to marketing executive, which essentially means that she goes to the market and beats herself with a rock. And Al just is still working things out. But it seems like she's finally admitted to herself that she needs to do something. and not blame everyone else for her situation that she's currently in, as she has done previously. And also the relationship between both Chauncey and Al seems to be developing. They've both had looks at each other without the other seeing, and so potentially, as I've said before, that is going to be a thing going forward. Episode 7, Day in Court. The king heads out and he looks like he's going to battle. He's fully armoured up, but it's only him. And the next time we see him, he's actually in a therapist session. And the therapist speaks to him, but he just doesn't want to take anything in. And just as he's about to leave, it's pointed out that he looks like he's come ready for battle, as if this was going to be a fight. And just before he walks out the door, the therapist tells him that he is enough. And sometimes that's all you need to hear, that you are enough. And he breaks down. We then see the shit shoveler family as they are going around the back of the house, and it seems like it is that time of year. They are about to harvest some crops that they have laid out. Eddie is really pleased about this. The only issue is when they get round to the vegetable patch, it is in tatters, and there is a goat standing over it, but he is wearing the crown's insignia. And so Al is also ready for a battle. She's sick of the crown getting away with all this shit, and wants to take them to court. Eddie and Mikey don't think it's a good idea, but they go along with it, because and always seems to know what she's doing. After his therapy session, the king turns out to be a totally different person. And one day when Prince Chauncey bumps into him, thinking that he's going to get a thrashing, his father just says, "It's okay, son, and we should go for a walk." And at one point, the king takes a flower, picks it up, and just eats it. And Peter Serafinowicz just fucking nails it, how he does it. I don't know if it was a real flower, I think it was, but it was brilliant. Just no reaction whatsoever, no selling it, just pops it in and eats it. Al, however, is going to court, and she turns up at the palace, thinking that she is going to sue the crown. But when Vexley turns up, he tells her that the only person that she's going to be suing is the goat. When they get into the court, Vexley has basically tampered with the jury and had 12 goat herders turn up, and he's also able to bribe the judge. Al, however, perseveres, and as she interviews Mikey, Mikey points out that the goat was there, and it's the goat's fault that their crops are the way that they are. But when Vexley stands up, he asks if that is his official statement, and when Mikey says yes, Vexley tells him that, well, now we can sue you for defamation if this trial goes our way. And so essentially, if they don't win the case, it's going to be Eddie on the block, not Jenny from the block. Al thinks his trial is out of hand now and is massively unfair, and so quickly heads out of the courtroom to go and get something that will aid her in this trial. So she goes to get Chauncey, but she actually wants his dad. And now that it seems that they're starting to bond, Chauncey thinks it's a great idea that he will be able to come down to the courtroom and sort out this mess. However, when Chauncey asks his father whether he'll be able to go down to the courtroom, his father seems to basically have a hemorrhage at the thought that there are problems with his laws in his land. And as he starts to shake and bleed from the nose, Chauncey realises that this isn't going to happen, and so runs back to the courtroom to tell Al that it's not going to happen. Al realises that her dad is going to lose this case, and Vexley is just being underhanded and trying his best to win this case for the crown. And so later on, when Chauncey asks his father about whether he is going to be able to help them with this case, his father has basically done a 180. It seems like he's now not going back to therapy and has actually burnt down the hut of the woman who was his therapist. And when his servant comes over and informs him that they don't have any cherries, he murders him on the spot. And so Chauncey realises that he has gone back to his old ways and that there is no way in hell that he will be able to help him out. Al is thinking about ways to get out of this, but it just seems dire. And as she sits talking to Eddie, Eddie is reserved. He feels like this is going to be the end anyway, and so was basically checked out. After Eddie goes to bed, Chauncey comes over and he has brought a library worth of books. For the rest of the night, much like in any legal drama you've seen, Chauncey and Al start to go over the books and find something in there that will help them with this case. Eventually they do, as always, and we know that the next morning they will be heading back, and if they don't win, it's Eddie's head on the chopping block. So the next day in court, Vexley gives his closing arguments and essentially looks like he's got it all wrapped up. However, then Al has to give her closing remarks, and as she does, she tells them that essentially it says in the rules that because this goat is meant to eat her father to death, that it can't do that if that goat is his wife. And so there is a catch in the law that says nothing about whether a man can marry a goat. And so by royal decree, as in Prince Chauncey, it turns out that Eddie Shitshoveler and the goat are now married, or betrothed to be married. And therefore, as it states in the law, a wife cannot eat her husband. So essentially, the goat can't eat her husband, Eddie. And so Al ends up winning the case because she manages to get her father off scot-free. As they come out of the courtroom, Chauncey is confronted by his father, who is disappointed in him once again. And Chauncey just heads off to his room. It seems like Al wants to say something to the king, but she manages to keep it bottled up and walks away. Later on that evening, Al turns up at the castle and returns the law books that Chauncey had lent her. And when she does, she asks Chauncey if he wants to come to dinner with them. And so he goes over to the Shitshovel household and has a nice dinner with Al, Eddie, Mikey, and the newest member of their family, Gobbler the Goat. Episode 8, First Date. So we get a musical interlude, which is basically the story of Al and Chauncey at this point, where she's a peasant girl and he's a prince. And nobody knows if they're friends or if there's something more, and both of them are so awkward that, and it doesn't seem that this mystery is going to get solved at any point soon. As we head into the episode, it seems that both Al and Chauncey have been hanging out quite a lot recently, and whenever they are, there's glances and flirtation, but never actually stating at any point that they're either dating or on dates or want to date. Eventually, Chauncey invites Al to this science lecture held by a famous astrologer. Al jumps at the chance to hang out with Chauncey more, but he never states that it is their first date. And so, after Al's gone and Vexley questions him, Chauncey says, well, of course it's a date. It's implied that it is a date, and Vexley tells him that, yeah, but you didn't state it was a date, so is it just friends hanging out or what? Which he can't really answer. Eddie, however, is in the pub with his friends, and he gets told some news. And the way that they do the news is quite inventive. So in each episode, or in every other episode, there seems to be this mad crone in the village that jumps out of barrels whenever they're doing an execution or whatever it is. It's sort of a bit throughout the whole series. But when she's not at executions jumping out of things, she's in the pub and she's passed out drunk. But while these friends are talking to Eddie, all of a sudden they just go, hang on a minute, go quiet, and the news is about to come on. And it's at this point that this crone pops her head up and goes, and the news at 6 is, and she announces this news that there has been druids seen coming into town and that they are about to infest this town. Essentially, it's this whole thing about immigrants coming in and horseshit. These guys want to come live here and pay taxes, so yeah, let them as far as I'm concerned. But later on, Eddie is going through the town and he's dragging his cart along with him. And when the wheel comes off his cart, a woman comes out of nowhere who he's never seen before. And don't forget, Eddie knows everyone in the town and she offers to help him. And so Eddie ends up inviting her to the pub later on, but realizes that she is possibly the druid that they were warned about. Also, what I found interesting about this scene is when Eddie's wheel falls off, you can visibly see the metal attaching that is on the cart. It's meant to be an old-timey wooden cart, so it just made me laugh. Al and Chauncey get to this lecture, and just as they're about to go in, the guy who is basically the ticket vendor asks them if they want the couple special for 3 coins, or whether they want the 2 singles for 4. Chauncey stands for ages, thinking about what he wants, and ends up taking the 4-coin option, which you can see written on Al's face that it is disappointing to her. Once they head inside the tent and the lecture starts, it turns out that this Archibald Cosmos looks nothing like his poster. His poster depicts basically what you'd consider, I don't know, an ancient Greek with the name Archibald. So just an old man who follows the stars and knows all about astrology. You'd think probably like Plato. However, he is a lot younger than that and is quite handsome. And so straight away, Al is smitten as soon as she sees this guy. So, of course, Chancely recognises this and starts competing with this guy. After the lecture, Al and Chancely go and speak to this guy. And Archibald tells him that there is a comet coming overhead tonight and that he wants to go out and watch it and was hoping that they would come with him. They both agree to it. And then as they walk through the town, Al is picking this guy's brain and they seem like they are from a similar background. Al says that the way that her family lives, being shit shovelers, she can't really afford holidays, but this guy is a well-travelled person. Chancely, however, is also well-travelled, but does things a lot more upmarket, whereas Archibald just loves to rough it. Eventually, Archibald reveals that he is actually from a poor family as well, much like Al, and so she starts to dream of a life much like he has. Chancely, however, is really trying hard to win back Al's affection. Eddie, on the other hand, has ended up screwing things up with this lady that he met, the druid, because when he's ended up in the pub, his friends are making jokes about druids and laughing heartily at them. And when this woman comes in to meet Eddie, Eddie hangs his head and acts like he doesn't really know her, while his friends are goading him, saying, "Yeah, we're right, aren't we, about these druids?" He's just ignoring all conversation, including looking at her. Afterwards, he goes over to see her, and she rejects his apology, because essentially, she could have used his backup at the inn, and yet, he didn't give it. And so she's disappointed in the way that he acted. That night, Al, Archibald, and Chancely all go out to watch the comet. As they do, Archibald and Al are being heavily flirtatious with each other, and Chancely is basically a third wheel. However, later on, Chancely ends up choking on some meat, because, as we know, Chancely's only just learned how to eat soup properly. And so handling meat was a bad idea for him, and he's ended up choking. But Archibald comes to the rescue, because he learns a technique from some, I can't remember what he says, ancient monks or something like that. But it's basically the Heimlich manoeuvre. After Archibald saves Chancely, he walks off for a little bit. And when he turns back, he sees that Archibald and Al are kissing. And so he just storms off. Once he's back at the castle, Al turns up and he essentially insults her, saying that she's a peasant and he's a prince and that they shouldn't even be friends because that's the way things should be. And it's against the natural order that they would be friends. And so Al gets a little offended by this, and especially when he starts being a bit childish and calling her names. And so she just walks off. Eddie, however, ends up getting pissed off with his friends in the pub because they keep telling jokes about druids and A, they're not good, and B, they're offensive, and Eddie obviously likes this woman, so he essentially tells them that they all suck, and that it's not fair what they're doing, and he leaves the pub as well. Afterwards, this druid lady comes up and tells him how much she appreciates him for doing what he did, and that she knows the bartender, and so he told her all this information. And the next time you see Eddie and the druid lady, they're both in the pub with his friends, and they're all talking about what actually the druids are doing and what kind of life they lead, and essentially just dispelling some myths about them. Al, it seems, is now with Archibald, and both Al and Chancely seem to regret their decisions to fall out with each other. Al is seen spying on the castle through a telescope while trying to look at the stars, and Chancely looks out the same window that he told Al that she wasn't worthy of his friendship, and the episode ends with the same lute player from the beginning. I think it's a lute. Someone's probably going to say something. But with the lute player at the end, singing a song about how Chancely has fucked up his chance with Al, and now she's with someone a lot cooler and a lot more handsome. Episode 9, Moving Out, Part 1. Eddie sees that Al is really starting to grow up. And not only is she growing up, but he is starting to see that she doesn't need him anymore. And especially now that she's seen Archibald, it seems like he is more surplus to requirements than ever. the only thing that he really holds over her is the fact that she works with him. And so when Lila, the druid woman, comes over to see Eddie and he's a bit mopey, she asks him what's going on, and he tells her exactly that. And she says, well, maybe you should find a way to get more time with your daughter. And so he makes up the excuse that apparently it's coming into cabbage season, and therefore their services as shit shovelers is going to be a lot more. They're going to be doing night shifts, they're going to be doing evenings, they're going to be doing weekends. It's just going to be a whole load of shit. And so Al says, well, you know, whatever you need, I'm there to help. Chauncey, however, is not taking this well at all. He is moping around. And when Vexley comes to visit him, it seems like he hasn't bathed in days. Even the guy who is acting as Chauncey's personal bard is offended by Chauncey's odour. And even though he's having to sing for him, he doesn't want to be in the same room as Chauncey at this point. Vexler tells Chauncey that he needs to get out of this funk because his father needs to see him. And when his father speaks to him, he tells him that he's getting married. As in, Chauncey is getting married because this war with the Maldrogians isn't going well and the king needs this backup plan. And so he is about to marry his son off. After Al ends up having all this overtime where she's been working loads, she ends up saving quite a lot of money. And this means that Archibald can go out and get a cart for them both. And when Eddie thinks it's just for them to be riding around town on, she tells him, no, we're actually going to be moving to Paris because it's got a lot of art and culture and universities and clever people there. And we want to be where these people are. Sounds like the Cheers fucking theme tune. And so now Eddie can't believe what's happened. And according to Al, it's all because of him, because he's given her enough hours and has paid her enough, so now she can go and live the life that she wants to lead with Archibald in France. Al sees Maggie for the first time after her revelation that she's going to be moving to Paris, and she tells her all about it, and Maggie is excited for her. This is what Al's wanted all along. Al always thought she was better than the town that they lived in, and so now she can go off and do what she wants to do. Al suggests that Maggie come visit, but Maggie tells her that it's going to be 10 months for me to get there. It's impractical. And so Al asks if Maggie wants to come with her. And Maggie tells her, no, I enjoy what I'm doing here and I'm doing important work, so I'm not going to come with you either. Chauncey, however, meets his new bride-to-be. And at first, it's a little bit awkward between the two of them until she sees a portrait of him and asks about the duck that's in the picture. And eventually, he realises how much these two have in common. Not only are their parents murderous tyrants, and her mother is also a drinker, they are both into ducks. And that is something that Chauncey absolutely adores. And so they begin talking about home life and their ducks. Al comes home to start packing and finds her father and Mikey dressed in berets and smoking cigarettes and eating entrees, and they were just about to have an intellectual conversation about intellectual things, which neither of them can state what they were going to be, but apparently that's what it was going to be. And so Al sees straight through it that they are trying to keep her here, and she tells them both that she's moving to France. There is nothing that they can say or do to stop her, and that she needs to pack the cart. When she starts packing the cart, Eddie comes out and he tries a different tact with her and tells her that she can't go anywhere and that he forbids it. And then Eddie tries to wreck the cart that they've just bought, but it's too well built and he'll only end up putting his back out. As he tries to storm away from the cart, he falls over, and then when Al tries to help him up, he pushes her away and tells her, fine, go. Chauncey and his bride-to-be go for a walk around the lake and they are getting on really well, but eventually his bride-to-be starts talking about the future and how he will have to come to Valdrogia. She will not stay where they are. And once they get there, he will start wars. He will have many, many children and will probably die at the hands of his most trusted advisor. And this seems to jar Chauncey a little bit. That's not his style. He's not like his dad. Al, however, is now ready to go. And she's waved off by Maggie and Mikey. And when she asks, I guess Dad's not turning up then, that he doesn't want her to go, and therefore he won't give his blessing. Al tells Mikey that she's sick of doing what Dad tells her and that she won't ever do what Dad tells her again. We then cut to Chauncey about to beg his father not to let the marriage go ahead, but his father tells him, go on, get out there. And Chauncey answers, yes, father, whatever you say. Chauncey, however, ends up standing up to his father and tells his father that he doesn't want to go through with the wedding. And so his wife-to-be seems perfectly fine with this. She is happy to let this slide, apart from the fact that she now has to kill everyone in the town. And so she calls on her Valdrogian army to start the killing. Al, however, has now got out of town and seems a little bit distracted because obviously her father didn't turn up for her leaving the town. And she knows that she's probably never going to see her father again. However, in her belongings, Eddie has packed something which reminds her of her childhood. It's actually a rotten potato, but it was something that he gave her when she was a child. And it was something that he essentially made put a spell on her to keep her protected at all times. And so he's put this in there to keep her protected even now. And so while she's thinking about this, she hears the horns from the town, which are essentially that they are going to war. And she rushes back, but Archie doesn't want to go with her. And he ends up throwing a bit of a strop, because apparently all girls are like this, and all the women he dates turns into psychos. It's very, very much like a modern day situation, and I'm here for it. It was so funny, just watching him fucking go off on one. But Al heads back to the town and finds her father. It's at this point that we see how pleased Chauncey is because he's managed to stand up to his father, but inside the castle right at that second, there is war going on and he is just sat behind a table, smug as fuck. Al goes back and she finds her dad and her brother. However, at that point, town crier, who I haven't really mentioned that much, but he is playing by Jamie Demetriou and it's fucking brilliant. He is walking through the town, ringing his bell and shouting, we're all fucked. And then we find out that is to be continued. But of course, that continues right now with episode 10, Moving Out, part 2. The town is now a full siege. Even though it seems Eddie is going about his normal daily business, he's pulling the cart through the town while arrows are literally raining from the sky. And when he stops to speak to one of his friends, it turns out that he is not really by this whole siege thing. And so when Al comes over, she tells him that it's the siege of the century, but he's like, yeah, but there was one before that was the siege of the century. They can't all be the siege of the century. And I like the fact that this show does a lot when it comes to the so-called media, where the media always inflates what's going on, and it's the practical people like Al and Eddie who dispel these bullshit myths about how this is the worst thing ever, and it just makes me laugh the comparisons with actual news and tabloid news. It's just really, really funny. And how when you actually get experts on, experts will dispel all this bullshit. Eventually, Eddie lets slip that he has a bunker, and so Al tells him that they need to get there as soon as possible. It now seems like the King's Knights have managed to eliminate all the wedding guests who started the riots. But the queen, or the princess in this case, has actually got away. And so she is leading her army towards the town. And so the king realizes that he has let his town down, but he actually doesn't care and tells both Chauncey and Vexley that he is gonna go and get on his yacht that apparently is the size of the village. And Chauncey says, well, if we're gonna go and get on the yacht and it's the size of a village, why don't we take the village to the yacht? And they can all live there and be safe. And his father's like, well, they're just peasants, who cares? And Chauncey gives this rousing speech about how they helped him and how they accepted him and how they made him a better person. And that he needs these people. These people deserve to live. But his dad doesn't care and leaves. Vexley is also looking to leave as well. But Chauncey tells the guards to open the gates so that he can let people into the castle and they can be safe. At this point, Eddie, Al and Mikey are now in this bunker, but it seems that the supplies that were in there aren't any good. And when Eddie tells them that they've got plenty of fresh water and a good ceiling, all of a sudden the ceiling caves in and the water barrel is burst open. So now they have no supplies, no roof, no water. But then they hear about the fact that the prince has opened the castle, and now they know their mission. They have to get to the castle. Al looks at the cart and reinforces it with lots of different equipment. Now, bear in mind, up until that point, every time they look out of this bunker, they're seeing absolute devastation outside. But Al manages to do a full-on refurb of this car and make it look absolute badass, including doing, like, lots of tool work to make sure it looks cool in the middle of a firefight and while arrows are raining down on her. It's fucking crazy, but it makes me laugh just watching it. Now that this cart is ready, Al says that she is going to pull them towards the castle. But Mikey offers himself up as a sacrifice because he feels like if there's anything that he can do properly, it is this. And so Al and her dad get in the back and Mikey starts to pull the cart. At the castle, Chauncey is organising people and making sure that people are safe and getting indoors. When the nuns turn up, Maggie is leading the pack. But at this point, Al and her family have not arrived yet. And so Chauncey refuses to close the gates until they do. However, on the way over to the castle, Eddie keeps seeing his friends and keeps picking them up until the point when the cart becomes too heavy just outside the castle gates and it breaks down. The back axle comes off and everyone falls out. They are then captured by the Valdrogians and taken into the town square. Chauncey hears of this and wants to raise what's left of his army and take them out to go and fight for the townspeople. But his main guard tells him, I'm not doing that because I will lose my dental, my pension, my health insurance, all this other bullshit. And so Chauncey has to trick them and jumps down a rubbish chute to escape the castle. At this point, after Al has called everyone stupid for getting them caught, the Valdrogian leader, the princess, comes over and tells them that they have one choice for someone who can live to tell the tale. And so everyone in the cage chooses Al because they're all stupid because they got them caught and Al told them that they were stupid. And so she deserves to be alive and happy. Al is given flowers, a sash, and a horse to get to Paris and is let go. Just as she is about to leave, she sees Chauncey, who has now decided to try and attack the Valdrogians with a stick to try and get to this cage. However, Al tells him that they need to come up with a proper plan. And so they go back into the castle and start to look at a proper plan of what to do. Vexler, however, has ended up getting pissed off with the king because the king is basically laughing at the peasants that he's left behind. And he tells Vexler that you were one of those at one point and now look where you've got to. You're rich and you are going to live on a yacht. Blah, 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 blah. You are safe. And Vexler realises that that's not what he wants. And so just as they're coming up with a plan, they realise that there's only two of them until Vexler shows up and says, no, there's three. Al realises that she's got a plant on her that causes boils and blackened teeth. And knowing that the Valdrogians, and especially the leader, are frightened of diseases, they come up with a plan, which involves Vexler handing over Chauncey to this leader. So Chauncey gets locked up in the cage with all the other people. The next morning, when it comes to killing the townsfolk, he hands out a weed which turns your teeth black and makes you look like you've got the plague. And so as soon as the Valdrogians see this, they think that everyone has got the plague and therefore run out of town, saving the townsfolk and saving the town. As everyone is now safe, everyone is let out of the cage. Al and Chauncey kiss for the first time. That night they have a big party, and the next day it seems like Al is ready to leave, but this time she isn't leaving with Archibald. This time, she is leaving with Chauncey. Her and Chauncey are going off to France, just like she wanted to. And so Chauncey installs Lord Vexler as the next rightful heir to the throne and hands him the crown and tells him that he is now the king. Al, however, is about to leave and her father asks if she's sure she wants to go and whether there is anything left for her. And she tells him, yeah, can you just do the magic spell one last time? And so he casts the protection spell, and then her and Chauncey head off into the sunset to go to Paris. And that is the end of the season. Okay, so I'm going to keep this short and sweet, but I really want to wrap up this series. It is such a funny series. Like I've said, I love the takes on the modern day versus the old way of doing things. When fucking Maggie is sat with the rosary beads and she looks like she's scrolling on a phone, it's how good it is shot is brilliant. this series made me laugh so much. Like, the first half, I think, was better than the second half. I think they knew where they wanted to go with the second half, and therefore they led it down that path. Whereas the first half was a bit more random stuff going on. I mean, it all eventually led to Chauncey and Al getting together, and we knew that was going to happen. I even said it in that episode. But to get to the end, it just felt a little forced. But I still liked it. I still enjoyed it. It was still funny. And it's such a charming show. Like, Daniel Radcliffe's always a joy to watch. Geraldine Viswanathan, I've just found out, is going to be in the Thunderbolts. So that's going to be fucking amazing. I know people don't really like the MCU anymore. It's not fucking cool, but I don't care. I love it. I think it's great. And you can fight me on that. And yeah, I cannot wait for the Thunderbolts now. I mean, it was going to be great anyway, but knowing she's in it, that makes me even happier. Steve Buscemi is just a fucking great actor and an absolute star. His facial expressions are great, and he's just got that face that is bizarre but brilliant. And John Bass, who I haven't mentioned enough, playing Mikey, was so funny throughout. He always ends up playing the awkward character, and he comes up with these lines that are so weird but very funny, and I do enjoy watching him. And oddly enough, it's not going to be the last time we see John Bass either this season for the podcast, because I know he turns up in the newsroom. Karen Soney is just brilliant throughout. All I keep thinking while I'm watching him on screen is him being the taxi driver in Deadpool. And I love it. He's so good in that role as the downtrodden taxi driver who just wants to be friends with Deadpool, the superhero. He's so funny. And in this, he's just as funny, just as dry. And Peter Serafinowicz is just so good in this role as well. I've only seen a few things with him in it, like Guardians of the Galaxy or Shaun of the Dead. I never watched his TV show, and I probably should have done, because I've heard great things about it. But I think he's so good, and he plays his king so well. The only person I could have seen doing it as well was Anthony Head, because there was one point when I was watching it, and I'm looking at him going, God, Anthony Head would have been great in this role as well. Especially after the role that he played in Ted Lasso. He would have nailed this role as well. But yeah, I think this series on a whole has just made me laugh so much. It's such a fun series. And I know I keep saying it, I do like watching all of these people act. And I can't wait for the next series as well. The next series is set on the Oregon Trail, which is also something that I'm interested in. The amount of times that I've thought about what the next National Treasure film should be, I've always thought about it being on the Oregon Trail. And I don't know how they do it, but that's what I've thought about, and I'll probably come to that when I start talking about the National Treasure series. That comes up in like 2 seasons' time. But yeah, I love this show, and it's been such a fun series just rewatching it again, and I genuinely cannot wait to get onto what's next, because it is Santa Clarita next, then the newsroom, then back to Santa Clarita, then finish the newsroom, and then finish Santa Clarita, and that is season 4 over. So I'm going to say goodbye for now. I hope you are doing well out there. I keep saying it, come talk to me on social media, come say hi, come follow me, do whatever. I love to hear from you guys, and I just saw today that my downloads on Spotify hit 50,000, so that's amazing. Thank you all so much. By the time this comes out, I'm hoping it's going to be a lot more, but 50,000, I never thought that anyone would want to download this. And yet, it's been downloaded 50,000 times now. So, that's pretty amazing. So, thank you very much. And I hope you're all doing well out there. And I will speak to you soon. Bye. And that is it for now, amigos. And yes, I am as angry as you are at me for that sentence, but I hope you enjoyed the show and had some fun along the way. It means a lot that you are listening and supporting me. This is an independent podcast after all, and doesn't get a lot of backing. So it is great to know that you're out there, you're listening. And if you want to come talk to me on any of the platforms I'm on, just come say hi. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, and I'm even a little bit on TikTok. I don't post that much, but I'm on there. And you can also drop comments in the comment sections on any of the platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts from. But as always, thank you for your time, and I will speak to you soon.